We're talking about so-called long haulers and what it takes to recover from COVID-19. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The medical community hasn't come to a consensus on a definition of recovery that extends beyond someone being discharged from the hospital or testing negative for COVID. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, published a report recently that warned of prolonged symptoms for adults who are hospitalized with the virus. Have you tested positive for COVID-19? What has recovery been like? Do you feel 100%? What do you want to know about how the state arrives at the number of people who have recovered? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Jeff Potthoff is an emergency medicine physician and chief quality officer for UW Health. Dr. Potthoff, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
And we also have Mark Rickers here, digital producer for WPR's To the Best of Our Knowledge. He's been reporting on long haulers for WisconText. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Mark, let's start with you. Why did you want to understand and put some parameters around what it means to be recovered from COVID?
Well, the state health authority publishes a number called recovery status. It's actually 86% of the total positive cases of COVID-19 statewide. And started talking about that number, and it just seemed like a lot of people. And like we wanted to know what that experience of recovery meant, especially having heard a lot about all the different kinds of recovery that people are experiencing. I mean, if some people are getting better within a few weeks and some within a few months, how do we decide what recovery actually means?
And you talked with someone named Adrienne Lathan. Can you tell us about her recovery road, her stages of COVID?
Sure. So Adrienne was hospitalized early in the pandemic. She nearly died in the hospital, sadly. But she did get better. She was put on oxygen for 30 days. She was basically sent home on oxygen, and then she was kind of at home just trying to get better from symptoms of difficulty breathing, fever, a lot of respiratory and fatigue symptoms. But one other aspect of this that she told me about was just survivor's guilt. Her father passed away while she was sick, also with complications from COVID-19. She had other family members and friends. And so she's kind of working through the mental toll of having experienced all that loss as well.
Dr. Potthoff, why are the recovery stages so different for each person who experiences this virus?
Yeah, we're still trying to figure out why that's happening. So if you get a common cold, you don't expect to be sick for, weeks to months. Same with the flu. You might be sick for a week and then you slowly recover, but not a whole lot of people have these long-lasting symptoms. We're still learning more about COVID-19. We know that people who have more severe acute illness are the ones who are more likely to have these lingering symptoms. But this is one of the things that worries us about COVID-19 is it's a brand new disease. So, I can tell someone who has hypertension what their long-term risks are, what's going to happen. Someone with high cholesterol, we don't know what to tell people with COVID-19 because some people who had it early on in the pandemic are still having these long-lasting symptoms. We're just not sure how long they're going to last, if they'll ever go away, what that'll look like. It'll take us years to know what this actually looks like.
We're learning, too, that these long haulers, as they're called, or long-termers, they are starting support groups with each other, and that they're concerned that they're not believed, that their symptoms are lingering, and that they're being told by the medical community or that their doctor that they should be fine, they're recovered. What is the discrepancy there, Dr. Potthoff?
I think the discrepancy is early on. The only thing we can compare COVID to are other respiratory illnesses, and typically people do fully recover from those. Now, I think with the additional reports that are out now, both what the CDC is saying, there's a study from King's College. These are showing up in all of the medical journals. Providers aren't going to call these people, faking it or overreacting. There is enough data now where this is a real phenomenon. There are people who are having a very difficult time recovering from COVID-19. They tend to have similar symptom sets. So this is a real thing. We don't fully understand it, but to say that it doesn't exist, I don't think we can say that anymore.
We're discussing how coronavirus patients recover differently from the virus. We're talking to WPR digital producer Mark Rickers and Dr. Jeff Potoff from UW Health. You can join in with your experience with COVID and what your recovery has been like. Questions about the recovery process at 800-642-1234. Mark, explain for us, how do state health officials track whether patients have recovered from the coronavirus and how they arrived at this recovery status?
Well, they're basically assessing for further infection risk. So they go by three criteria. They go by either if your respiratory symptoms have resolved. So basically you're not showing a fever, you're breathing okay, you're actually starting to feel a little bit more normal. That you've quarantined for up to 14 days, or that it's been 30 days since your positive test result. And that last one is kind of the difficulty because a lot of patients, they'll get a positive test result. The state will follow up with them. They'll say, I feel pretty terrible, but I'm doing okay. And then the state probably won't contact them again. So that at a certain point, you have to assume that that person got better. That's not necessarily meaning that that person's totally lost. They're you know, probably talking to their doctor, but, in terms of the state numbers, that person then shows up as recovered.
So it's somewhat difficult and subjective to figure out what that number really is, what that 59,000 and, where it is today, about 59,000, really means for Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a pretty good, I mean, when you look at that number, it's easy to think, oh, but the majority of people who've caught this in the state of Wisconsin have already gotten better. But there's a fairly good chance that many of those people are still experiencing symptoms of the virus.
Dr. Potoff, which patients typically benefit the most from hospitalization with COVID?
Yeah, I'd say the number one reason people get hospitalized for their COVID-19 is the respiratory difficulty. So the shortness of breath that gets so severe that they're not getting oxygen to their tissues. That's a dangerous condition to be at home with. That's probably the number one reason that we end up bringing people into the hospital for COVID-19. Now, it might be that just putting some supplemental oxygen, a small amount of oxygen on these people, and keeping an eye on them for a couple days is enough. But for some of these people, they'll quickly decompensate and they'll find themselves in an ICU needing a ventilator. But it usually revolves around the respiratory component of COVID-19.
Early on in COVID, there was just this panic for trying to have enough ventilators and getting enough ventilators. And then there was this back off from ventilators and that it was ultimate resort. Where are we at with ventilators?
You know, right now we're in a much better place than we were earlier on in the pandemic. You know, there was this thought that, you know, if we didn't do safer at home or if we didn't do the lockdown, that we would very quickly be overrun with COVID-19 patients. And the citizens of the state responded really well, better than I even thought that they would. And we didn't get overrun. And what that did is it gave us time to plan and acquire what we needed. So at UW Health and like all the other health systems, I'm sure in the state, we know exactly how many ventilators we have. We know how to reprocess things on a ventilator so that we can use it a little bit more efficiently. We even looked at anesthesia machines, the machines that we use to put people to sleep for surgery. Push comes to shove, we can use it as a ventilator. So we feel like we're in a lot better place with ventilators. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we'd hate to test this plan because any hospital is going to have some sort of max to the capacity that it has.
We're talking with UW Health emergency medicine physician Jeff Potoff and Mark Rickers, who's been reporting on how public health tracks COVID recoveries. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about how public health tracks people who've recovered from COVID-19 and what recovered actually means. The recovery status from the Department of Health Services that we've been talking about, it stands at 59,076. or nearly 87% of confirmed cases in the recovered category, 86.6% to be exact. What do you think of how the state tracks coronavirus infections? What numbers are you following? Have you tested positive? When did you feel like you had recovered? Join in 800-642-1234. We have UW Health Chief Quality Officer Dr. Jeff Potthoff and WPR journalist Mark Rickers who stays with us. Let's take a call now. Don is joining us from Janesville. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a screener at one of the hospitals, and I feel really bad. And maybe he can touch base on this because I don't have a real clear thing. But I see these families coming in not feeling well, thinking they have COVID, spend $4,000 to $6,000 in the ER room and walk out without any treatment. And I understand there's no treatment, but I think these families and the news needs to let the people know that when you come into the ER, we're not going to do anything for you except for give you a $6,000 medical bill. I guess just some clarification on at what point will you be treated or not treated? So these people, you know, in a time when they aren't having jobs, they're not walking out with a $6,000 medical bill.
And Don, in certainly talking here about emergency room care, and I want to field this to Dr. Potthoff, what that triage looks like and what that care looks like in the emergency room setting, because emergency rooms are really costly.
Yeah, you're right. And this is actually a difficult thing that we struggle with because what we don't want to do is dissuade people who absolutely need to come to the emergency department from coming by saying it's expensive or that nothing's going to happen, because for that person, they might stay home and have just a really bad outcome. You know, I think in general, thinking about COVID in the emergency department, if you feel like you're just having symptoms that are closer to like a common cold. So, you know, I have some cough, I feel kind of tired, maybe I've got a headache. I don't have any special medicine in the emergency department to make you feel better. What I'll probably do is, you know, see if you're dehydrated. That's commonly associated with folks who have this. Maybe give you some fluids, but if you can drink water, you can take care of that. And then probably Tylenol or ibuprofen for the headache. The thing that I would caution people again against is if you are feeling short of breath and you're starting to get scared that you can't breathe good, at that point, it probably is really reasonable to come in and see us. And it's not so easy as like these are the numbers that you get admitted on and these are the numbers that you don't get admitted on. But there's a whole battery of tests we can do. We can monitor oxygen levels in the blood. Do chest x-rays, see how hard it is for you to breathe, that work of breathing, and taking all those factors together can determine whether we think it's okay for you to go home or if you need to come into the hospital.
Dr. Potthoff, I think we've seen here during COVID just how important it is to have primary care and to have nurse triage and other support systems to know when to take those steps. Are you seeing that in the virus?
You know, we do see that. I think, you know, one of the things that we are uncovering, or maybe not uncovering, we know it's been there, we're shining a light on it, is this idea that in the United States, it really has to do with whether or not you are lucky enough or you have the financial means to have health insurance. If you do, your ability to access these things, whether it's nurse triage, whether it's the emergency department, healthcare in general, it is much better versus in other countries where it doesn't really matter whether you have insurance or not. They have systems in place where everyone has access to a primary care provider and everyone has access to healthcare. So I think COVID has shown a light on that in the sense that people getting sick make the rest of us sick. So it just doesn't work for some of us to have access and not others. It affects all of us.
We're talking how the coronavirus recovery process works, how coronavirus patients recover differently from the disease, and how public health is tracking that. We're talking with Dr. Jeff Potthoff from UW Health and WPR digital producer Mark Rickers, taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234 about the recovery process. Let's bring in Tom now in Burlington with a question. Hi, Tom.
Does the way you breathe affect your ability to survive the disease? In other words, some people are shallow chest breathers and some people are deep belly breathers, and overweight people have a high mortality rate, it seems, because I think they don't have enough room to breathe. They're not getting the exchange that they should be getting.
Tom, thanks. Dr. Potoff, what about the way we breathe and this virus?
Yeah, Tom is onto something there. So not as so much like shallow breathers, deep breathers, but certainly we see worse disease in individuals who are obese. And we think what happens with that is coronavirus attacks the lungs. The lungs don't work as well. People who are obese, the lungs need to work harder because every breath you take that expands them has to work against additional weight. And that makes it harder for those people to breathe. They can even be harder to treat on a ventilator. So there is absolutely something there to, you know, how people breathe. Congruent with that is also people with underlying lung disease, you know, COPD, heart failure, even to some extent asthma. They don't do as well because they're already starting at a disadvantage when they get the disease.
Mark Rickers, what do researchers think might be affecting the speed and the difference of speed in how patients recover?
I don't think they know. Yeah. It's still kind of early days. You know, we're getting a lot of anecdotal reports in these patient groups, but the studies are still kind of coming in.
And with the long haulers, as they're called, are they still contagious if they have symptoms?
By most metrics, no. I mean, they all of the public health aspects of COVID are around infection. And as long as people are, you know, quarantined or isolated for 10 days, they're generally not going to be infectious to other people. It's just about recovering from those symptoms.
Dr. Potoff, why does the state use that 30-day benchmark to track whether someone is recovered?
Yeah, I think when you look at the state, like Mark said, they're really looking at infectivity. So can you infect other people or not? And they need to pick this point in time. So it needs to be, when you're looking at the data, it has to be this binary. Either you are or you aren't. Unfortunately, with COVID-19, you know, you might survive this acute phase. You might be alive at 30 days. But we have all this literature and all this data now that doesn't mean you're better. So I think we have to make sure we don't think of recovered as better. There are a lot of people who are not better after 30 days, and they're suffering from a lot of symptoms weeks, months afterwards.
What can happen if you have been on a ventilator for weeks or even some days? Are there side effects?
Yeah, so the ventilator, although it's a great tool to keep people alive, if you're on a ventilator, you're often sedated, you're paralyzed, your muscles don't get to work out. You really get weak. Everything about you gets weak. It's hard to have, you know, great nutrition. When you come off that ventilator, you're not ready to walk down the hall and go to the cafeteria. You are very weak. Many of these people can't go home. They have to go to nursing homes, rehab facilities, and it is a long journey to get back to where you were before you came in the hospital and were put on a ventilator.
Mark, what might be a better word than recovery to describe how the state is tracking infections?
I think Dr. Potoff actually gave it to me, which is recovering. It's people who are, you know, they're no longer an infection risk, but they are trying to nurse themselves back to health, whether that's under the care of medical professionals or under their own support network with people at home.
Dr. Potoff, what are you watching here as symptoms linger for months with some of these patients? What research is going to be really pivotal here on these long haulers?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple things. So there's people who have these symptoms, and that's worrisome, but we like to think one level deeper. So what might be long-term serious medical outcomes from COVID-19? And there is a couple studies out there that have us worried. There's one in JAMA Cardiology that says that people months after their battle with COVID have inflammation of their heart. That worries us that those people may be at risk for congestive heart failure, similar to people that have had heart attacks. We don't know if that's going to happen yet, but we have our eye on it. Likewise, in the journal Radiology, what radiologists are finding is that the pneumonia associated with COVID-19 is the same type of pneumonia that frequently scars our lungs. So those people with pneumonias that are like this sometimes have lifelong difficulty with their lungs, with shortness of breath. We don't know if that's going to hold true for COVID-19, but that pattern is there and it has us a little bit worried.
Mark Rickers, can you take us back to Adrienne Lathan? How is she doing today?
She is feeling better. She's working. She actually works for Milwaukee Public Schools, so she's helping get teachers set for the fall.
She's busy.
Yeah, she's definitely busy. You know, it's more about kind of taking that mental self-care, you know, and working through the feeling of loss. But she said when we spoke in July, she said she was still at about 80%. So she's still feeling a little bit run down, a little tired, a little difficulty breathing, but, you know, starting to get back to normal.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Anytime.
That was Dr. Jeff Potthoff, Chief Quality Officer for UW Health. Mark Rickers is digital producer for WPR's program To the Best of Our Knowledge. You can find his reporting at wiscontext.org. Coming up, we look at how the pandemic has disrupted our state's foster care system. That's coming up after a news update here on the Ideas Network.